Every Woman is a feminist show about women and girls making a difference and the men who support us. As 50% of humanity and 53% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, KKFI staff, volunteers, board, or management.
Hello, I'm Fiona Nowling, and with me today in the studio is my lovely wife, Una Nowling, and Christina Frazier behind the board.
And hello.
Hi,
everybody.
And this is still Pledge Week, so I'd just like to remind everyone before we start with our guest today that they can donate at 888-931-0901 or at kkfi.org. We have lots of lovely volunteers standing by to take your call. And we're starting a series of interviews with local women that we're calling Local Heroes or Wonder Women. We're exploring the lives of local women and what gives them the strength to do what they do. Today, we'd like to welcome to the show a friend of mine who was raised in a single-parent family, has known discrimination and prejudice, has been a single parent herself, and despite that is a wonderful person and great mom to her daughter, and has found love again, and how they're working together to be a family. Imani, welcome to Every Woman.
Hello.
I know I gave everyone a brief introduction there, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I am a 24-year-old mother. I was a single mom for a long time. I've grown up in Missouri, southern rural part, my whole life. I moved to Springfield, and then I moved to Kansas City here pretty recently whenever I found out I was pregnant with my daughter. And then I had a split up and then found love again. And I've been happy ever since.
That's great. I too grew up in a single parent family, but my father died before I was born, so it was a very different situation. What was it like growing up without your father?
It was rough at times. I felt pretty unwanted and wasn't really sure why he never tried to find us. But my grandfather and my grandmother lived 2 miles down the street, so my grandpa was my main role model for most of my life. If I didn't have him, I really don't know where I would be. If I called anyone dad, it would be him. But it was definitely difficult whenever we'd have Father's Day and I didn't know who to give my card to, especially whenever I was young. My mom would tell me about my father, but she never gave us a definite answer on where he was. So as time went on and I asked a lot of questions, tried to find him myself, only have spoken to him once in my 24 years of life, and he didn't want to talk about anything except for himself. So found closure with that, knowing that he didn't really want to know who I was. But then I just had to find myself.
So you mentioned your grandfather as your strongest role model. What about your mother and sister or your grandmother?
My sister was probably my youngest sister. She was probably my role model other than my grandfather. My mom wasn't really there for me in a lot of things. I was mainly the mother of the household. I'm the oldest of seven and had to find out a lot on my own.
I can't imagine having to look after six younger siblings and having to do all that without even like the authority of being, I'm your mother, listen to me.
Yeah, it was difficult at times, especially in the area that I lived in. A lot of people would try and find out secrets about everybody else. It was a really small town. I graduated with 40 people, so it was difficult sometimes to cover for somebody that wasn't really there.
Do you want to talk about why she wasn't really there?
I think, well, she didn't really tell us, but I think she has some mental issues, which it is what it is, but she grew up in a two-parent home. My grandfather, she said, wasn't really there because he worked a lot, but he's a really great man in my eyes. I'm not really sure why she wasn't the mother that she was supposed to be. after my father left, she married someone else, and that person was pretty abusive to my sister Olivia and I, who came from the same dad. He had three daughters with my mom. They divorced whenever I was 16. Then my mother married again for the third time and had the very youngest. And whenever she married him, he kind of took control of her life, and now we don't really speak.
That's got to be hard.
Yeah, it can be at times, because I don't even get to talk to my sisters as much as I'd like to anymore.
Yeah, and having been basically a mom to them for quite a while.
Yeah, it is rough.
That, unfortunately, is something that women had. It's a role that women had to step into quite a lot in the older times, when the mortality of parents would often put the eldest girl in the role of the mother in terms of raising the entire rest of the family. It's much less common today, and I think that it must be much more difficult today, because it's not as common and there's not as much intrinsic support systems. Mm-hmm. People don't understand or appreciate that much how quickly you actually had to have matured. I mean, you basically had an accelerated transition into adulthood. Is that correct?
Yes, very much so. It's hard when people say, oh, you're young. Oh, you're such a youngin'. Yes, I am 24 years old, but I had to grow up whenever I was 8. It was hard, but I didn't really have a childhood, so I try to have fun when I can. But and then also being young and then having a child, a baby having a baby. But I am pretty mature for my age. My husband is actually 6 years older than I am. But he's like, oh, I would never know. You act like you're so much older. His mom still asks me to this day, are you 28? Are you sure? Yes, I'm only 24.
There's good points to, you know, maturing earlier, but there's a lot of bad points. There's a lot of fun in childhood, but then again, a lot of times that's only for idyllic childhoods. You know, the people that grow up in two-parent homes in a nice little subdivision somewhere with, you know, 2.3 minivans and 1.9 Labrador retrievers, statistically speaking.
I always wonder what they do with that extra tenth of a Labrador.
Yeah, that's what the bandana's hiding. Because they always have a bandana, don't they?
So you once said to me something about how it hurt not knowing your father, and you didn't want to go, your daughter to go through the same thing and wonder. Can you tell me about having her and raising her?
Raising her, for the first year of her life, I was with her biological father. And I wanted to hang on as much as I possibly could, even though he treated me poorly, just because the way that I felt whenever I was a teenager, and even when I was a young or a preteen, I felt like I was abandoned, and I just never wanted her to feel that herself. And with time, I thought to myself, if her biological father doesn't treat me any better, then I'm going to leave. So I left right after she turned one. Even during that whole time that we were together, I was still doing it by myself. If I ever asked for him to watch her, it was always babysitting. And even after the time that we split, the times that he did see her, he'd have her for maybe an hour and tell me to come pick her up. So I tried for a long time to not necessarily push her onto him, which I didn't think I had to, since, I mean, he helped me make her. It was really hard, because I just didn't want her to feel the abandonment I felt whenever I was a kid. So with time, I figured out that he wasn't going to be around and that I had to buck up and figure it out. So I was like, I'm not going to be with anybody for a long time. It's just me and the baby against the world. And that's what I did. And I wandered upon my lovely husband now, who took her in like she was his own.
So, Imani, I have a question for you. What did your mom think about what you did, that you were raising your daughter by yourself, or was she not involved with your life at that time?
She was involved for a very short period of time, only because we had a lot of like family get-togethers for holidays during that time, and then after holidays kind of split off, she didn't really talk to me very much, because her husband didn't want her talking to me, because I was trying to tear them apart, and so she wasn't really there, and I mean,
the reason I ask is because in a way you did what your mother didn't do. You decided to leave a bad situation and strike out on your own. And that's something that your mother chose not to do. She chose to stay or to, you know, and I wondered if that was maybe part of the reason, you know, I wondered if that brought you together or tore you apart. And I guess it
didn't really do either, but for myself, like, her being the mom that she was showed me how not to be a mom. And that's one of the main things I'm grateful for, of her being my mother. She showed me how not to be a mom, so I can be the best mom that I can be for my daughter.
Yeah, a lot of people stay together for the sake of the kids and don't realize that how much them fighting all the time or the bad role model of how to treat other people is affecting those kids and what that's going to do to their future relationships.
Yeah, I definitely don't want that for her.
And it's an issue that's disproportionately heaped upon women. As of 2016, more than 77% of single-family households, for whatever reason, involved a single mom, with just the balance being a single dad.
Right.
So after you had your daughter and you decided to strike out on your own, did you have any, like, child support or anything like that from your ex?
Good question, but no. even when we were together, he never paid much money. I didn't really expect child support. I filed for it through the state, which takes forever, and still haven't seen money from that, and that was 2 years ago. But I would try to stay in contact with him, so then even if he didn't have the money, in quotes, to pay, to help. If he wanted to see her, then I would. I would let him, because time is more important to me than him giving me money.
And a lot of the time, you've got grandparents involved, and frequently grandparents are very, very attached to their grandchildren. So how were his parents during this time, or his family?
His mother tried to mediate between the two of us, tried to get us to sit down and talk to each other. A couple times I was up for it, but he would never show, or there were times that he would try and show up at my house to talk to me, and it just didn't work out. His mom still would try and call me and mediate and do what she could, which I appreciate her for that, because her and Sydney still have a relationship, and she still calls to check, and we still make lunch dates, and his great-grandmother as well. Sydney's great-grandmother. She does really well with keeping up and calling and checking in. So they have a good relationship so far.
That's really good, because often when parents split, you sometimes lose touch with the whole half of the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she deserves more than that. I still don't know to this day my biological father's side, so she deserves to have what I didn't have.
Yeah.
Sort of a connection to her roots.
Yeah. Yeah, her roots.
Yeah, you taught me how to say that in the break before the show. So I was saying roots.
Deep southern accent.
And I'm not even going to try and replicate it.
Your situation of, you know, the lack of child support is unfortunately very common. And while, you know, Fox News has been on the air recently trumpeting, well, look at this, there's just as many deadbeat moms as there are deadbeat dads, it's not really true at all, because it means in terms of raw percentages there are, but in terms of the percentage of people who are ordered to pay child support, it's predominantly the males, because generally speaking they are the ones that earn more money in society, to some extent because of fortunes, to some extent because they were the ones who became the primary breadwinner while the mother was expected to raise the children. And in some cases, it's due to wage inequity. There's so many intersectional issues of feminism that come to play in just something very simple involving the tragedy of being left without proper support for your children.
It's hard. It really is hard.
And so you obviously had to work to support you both. And as a single parent mom, you then have to also somehow find money for childcare so she could work and support you, and that's often a catch-22.
Yeah, childcare is not cheap. especially if you don't have a lot of family around or somebody that you can really trust to watch your child. Also trying to work around your schedule for your daycare, dropping them off as early as possible, and then making sure you get off of work in time to go and pick them up, depending on how far you work or how far you live. It's a lot of things that you have to think about, and then sometimes your job gets tired of you having to leave early because of your kid, and you're the only one that can pick them up. And it's hard. I've had to do that many times, and my job isn't usually very happy with me, but I have to do what I got to do.
Yeah, I was talking to some friends yesterday, and they had to disarrange their whole day because there is a list of like three people. They're not allowed to have more people than that on the list for who can pick the child up. So they were the only one that was available, and they had to go to-ing and fro-ing and leave out so that the mother of the child could continue at work and not jeopardize her job.
And child care is not cheap at all. Mm-mm. I mean, the majority of Americans that have to pay for child care, it consumes well more than 10% of their annual household budget.
It really does.
And a lot of the time, your usual largest expense is rent or mortgage, and that's usually somewhere about 25 or 30%. Mm-hmm. So that shows you how large a chunk of your income. You could buy a third of a house.
You really could.
For a year each time.
I just finished my taxes last week, and the amount of money that I spent in childcare was ridiculous. It was $7,000 to $8,000, and that's on the cheaper side. Because I'll tell people how much I pay for childcare, and they're like, "Oh, wow, that's really cheap." I mean, now that she's a little bit older, it knocked down a little bit. Because since she recently just turned three, $100 got knocked off because she doesn't need as much time and attention, or she's potty trained now, so I don't have to send diapers, and they have to spend one-on-one time with her as much as often. So.
It's another problem facing American women, especially now you have the combination of being a single mom, not receiving child support, not having support through your traditional family units, and you're having to pay a significant amount of money for child care yourself, which, according to the Census Bureau, is accelerating at a rate that outstrips inflation by a factor of 5 to 1 over the last 5 years.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane.
Like, there's 177 countries that give parental leave for when women have their children, or for adoptions, so that you can have time to bond and get to know your new child. And America is not one of them. There's a few companies that do that, particularly coming in the Fortune 500 ones, but there's no legal mandate. And we're one of the one of the few so-called first world and developed nations that's massively lacking behind in development there.
It truly is.
So, you said about it could cause issues at work with picking up a child from daycare if there's any issues, but were there any other issues at work with prejudice and harassment?
Plenty of sexual harassment. that's always reoccurring.
Could you tell us what type of work you do?
I work at a warehouse. So it's very physically demanding. I usually just wear my sweatpants and a t-shirt, nothing crazy,
and
no
what,
makeup.
What's the ratio of men to women in that job?
I would say there's about 50 people that work on my side of the warehouse. And there's probably, when I first started, there were only 4. And now there's 7.
Seven women?
Mainly women.
Oh, mainly
and
women.
And just 5 to 7 men.
Oh, okay.
There's mainly moms that work there because whenever we first started, they said that we were able to leave and do what we needed to do. If we needed to get off at a certain time, they'd work around it, or if our child is sick. But they came under new management, and they're not so lenient anymore. So now more men are coming, and women are leaving.
So I'm a little confused. So when you talk about sexual harassment, then what do you mean?
When you work in certain areas of the warehouse, they're very confined, small areas. There's only about 5 or 6 people that can work in there. And usually in the area that I work in is very physically demanding, anywhere from carrying 30 to 60 pounds at a time. And so there's most of the guys are in there, and then only 1 or 2 girls.
I see.
So, of course, there's a bunch of men in a warehouse, and there's not a lot of supervision. A lot of things get said that aren't really appreciated. Or if you try and tell them to stop, and you go and talk to a somebody to try and be like, hey, somebody's doing this. They're like, oh, well, maybe they didn't really mean it that way. Or you'll fill out a statement and nothing really happens. It happens quite a lot.
This was one of the criticisms of the Me Too movement, is that it was primarily kind of focused on sort of white-collar women. Actually, a lot of white women also. And now I know that they did they did talk to some women at a Ford production plant and some migrant workers and mm-hmm. and women who do cleaning in hotels. So it started to broaden a little bit. But I know that a lot of women in positions and jobs like yours feel like the Me Too movement maybe hasn't reached them. How do you feel about that?
I don't feel like it has quite reached in that sense. It's very difficult, especially being a younger woman, especially being a single mom and trying to hold a job. And if somebody is sexually harassing you, you mean you can't just come up and quit. What are you going to do? It's very challenging to me in that sense. Like, I don't... How do I say it? I don't think it has quite reached because of that, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so, like, when you mentioned the harassment before, do you think if you mentioned it now, it's still that...
No.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Mm-mm. And so many people, when people tell their tales of harassment, they're just like, well, why didn't she just leave? And that speaks so much to their huge privilege that...
I have someone to support me at home 24/7.
Yeah.
Like, not everybody does. I mean, I do now, but then I didn't. I mean, I couldn't just leave.
And even if you didn't have two of you working, you still have all those expenses, and just choosing to leave, even if you wouldn't necessarily lose your house, you'd still be greatly affecting the quality of care and standard of life for your child. You'd still have right. to make big decisions about
that. That's your constant thought is, oh, well, can I quit this job? No, wait, I can't. I have a child that looks up to me all the time. I have all these bills and all these things that I have to pay. Oh, I have this payment next week. I can't just get up and leave. I mean, what I get paid is extremely well compared to half the people I know. Yes, it's very physically demanding, but it pays very well. I can't just leave.
As a person of color, to what extent has discrimination played in your life so far? And what are the battles that you've had to fight, which I can't imagine being who I am, of course?
A lot of people think that being mixed, it's not so bad, since I'm a little bit lighter than the average black person or a little bit darker than the average white person. I feel like there's even more discrimination in that sense, because either you're not white enough or you're not dark enough. And it's hard to find where you fit. You might speak too white or you might speak too ghetto. They don't want you to be in their group of people or hang out with these group of friends, so they don't look at you differently. Growing up, it was especially hard because where I grew up, it was predominantly white. My sister and I, maybe one other person, pretty sure it was just the two of us, were the only darker-skinned people that lived in that area. There were many occasions during basketball and softball and whenever we traveled to different cities and different towns. I should say towns, not cities. people would be yelling vulgar things out, saying, oh, knock that N-word down again and knock this and that. And it was hard for a long time because you don't have anyone else to turn to. I mean, it's just me and my sister. I mean, who else am I supposed to look at? And then even growing up and moving to college, it was a huge culture shock because graduating with 40 people and then being in a class of 150 just in the classroom alone, not graduating class, is absolutely insane. That's whenever you start to see the racism in more different aspects and discrimination of if you're light enough or dark enough or if you can hang out with these people. Oh, you don't know that word? What do you mean you don't know that word? That's slang that everybody uses. I don't know that word. I speak too properly, apparently. So I wasn't able to hang out with a lot of people. It was a discrimination I've never seen. and I still deal with sometimes to this day.
There's a lot of cases like that in a lot of different cultures and groups. Within the LGBT world, the bisexuals frequently get erased and discriminated mm-hmm. against, because you can have it both ways, and if they pass a law, it won't affect you because you can choose.
Right.
But you can't choose who you fall in love with.
No, you can't. You really can't.
That sort of leads into the next chapter of your life, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So tell us about how you met someone at work.
Well, I started there in October of 2015. Yes. So my daughter wasn't quite a year yet. I just started this new job. I didn't really know a lot of people, of course. I got hired on by one friend. It was nice, and the person I met, which, Ryan, we became friends, and we were still technically both in relationships. I was getting that countdown of my daughter's almost a year old. I'm about to leave this relationship if he doesn't straighten up, and he just had some terrible things brought to his attention in his relationship. And so we became best friends and bonded over our crappy relationships. With time, we would go and hang out more, and we would talk over the phone late at night and exchange text messages. And with time, I was able to build up the courage to finally just split it off after that countdown came. And he really gave me that courage to do so, because I actually had somebody to fall on. And I really realized that I had love for him until a couple months after my ex and I split. And we started dating, and we just fell in love almost instantly. He's my absolute best friend. He didn't want to meet my daughter for quite some time, just because he didn't want to put that pressure not just on me, but also on her, for hypothetically, if we didn't work out. He didn't want to put that stress on her or on me, because I didn't want that either for her, because my mother brought in multiple people into my life and my sister's lives that has affected us in certain ways, and I never wanted Cindy to experience that. So after we fell in love and he finally met my daughter, I'm pretty sure that now she loves him more than me. every time we enter the house, "Oh, look, it's Dad! It's Dad, Mom! It's Dad!" I'm like, "Yeah, Mom's over here, you know, just cooking dinner and cleaning the house. And well, you guys get to go play and have a lot of fun."
Well, Dad's new, so still excited to get shop worn.
Yeah. "Oh, I've known you for a while, Mom. I don't need you." But they're best friends, and I kind of asked for a better person to be a part of her life, and we're always on the same page. Our communication is always open. And he just loves her as much as I do.
You know, that's very rare to start off with not a very good relationship, but following the pattern of your family, your mother, and then, you know, changing to what sounds like a very healthy relationship. So kudos to you. That's a very difficult pattern to break.
It really
takes a lot of people many times to have the self-confidence and courage to change, and then some people never do, and they just get caught up in that cycle.
It's true, because whenever I first started with Ryan, it was really difficult, because I wanted her to see the role model that he is, because I want her to grow up knowing that that's how you're supposed to be treated. So that's why I cut it off whenever Sydney was one, so she didn't remember. Because I didn't want her growing up being like, "Oh, well, he did it, so it's okay for me." I would not be okay with that.
And I know how hard it can be when you're in a relationship to realize just how bad the relationship is. Mm-hmm. You can complain to your friends, and until they say, "You've been complaining for months, you should do something," or you could be advising another friend who's in a bad relationship, and when you're saying things to them, you suddenly realize just how bad your relationship is, because it reflects back, and it's like, "Oh my God, this is my relationship too."
Mm-hmm.
And I've totally been there and found someone to support me. So I'm going to take a brief break there from your story because I did say at the start that it is Pledge Week, and we've got a brief spot from our Development Director Bill Sundahl, where he does his famous woohoo at the end. So everyone start listening.
Hi, everyone. This is Bill Sundahl, and we are kicking off a champions match right now. So call in the next 7 minutes and get your donation matched by our generous champion. And you can dial 888-931-0901 and do that, or go to kkfi.org. Fund as many hours of KKFI's programming as you can and get your donation matched right now. 888-931-0901 or go to kkfi.org.
Woohoo! Champions win!
See, I said there would be the famous woohoo. So we do actually have a champion match, and it is LaDonna Saunders.
Our CEO, our great leader.
Yes, our president. I said El Presidente earlier, but I was correct.
La Presidente.
LaDonna Saunders, president of the 90.1 FM KKFI Board of Directors, is pledging to match donations sent over the next, was it 7 minutes
seven
here?
7 minutes.
Up to a maximum of $150. So if you phone in at, what is that number?
888-931-0901. Or you can go to kkfi.org and you can pledge online.
And do say that you're phoning in for every woman, or put that in the little space for what you're supporting to make sure that we definitely hit that donation.
So have we started our timer yet?
I'm just about to start it.
Yes, our volunteers look like they need somebody to call. They look a little bit like they're ready to answer the phone.
They are just sitting there waiting to pounce. I mean, waiting to help you generously and then for you to give your money. They would never pounce on people.
So for all of our very gracious listeners out there that are tuning into our show today, some of you may be asking, you know, what are we trying to emphasize in today's episode? Because we have a different theme for every episode of Every Woman. And let me talk a little bit about our guest. You know, you haven't seen her on your television yet. You haven't sat down and ate popcorn and watched her in a movie yet. You haven't read about her in a book or sat through a political ad about her campaign running for Congress or something else yet. What she has done is, despite tremendous trials growing up, having to essentially raise her family by herself in lieu of her father and her mother, she has moved on to be a single parent who has also had to work through the trials of lack of child support, lack of other support throughout society, having to face the challenges of the high cost of health care and child care, and with those costs increasing year on year, and facing a political establishment right now that is trying to pull the rug out from under her, facing sexual harassment in the workplace as well as discrimination, facing discrimination being a person of color, not having tremendous employment ability to mobility to escape some of these situations. She, our guest Imani, is every woman, and that's why we are talking to her today, because we want to bring the show right down to earth in a language everyone can understand to highlight, honor, and celebrate every woman. And that's why we have this wonderful every woman on our show today. And these are the sorts of stories, as well as some of the more glitterati and the famous people or whatever we want to have on. These are the stories we want to keep bringing you over the upcoming year and beyond. And to do that, we really need a little bit of help, just a little bit of support to help keep us on the air and to help show that you like our mission and you like what we're trying to do here.
And while we all like LaDonna, we would like to take as much of her money from her as possible.
As I was joking last week, we need to, you know, grab her by the ankles and shake her upside down and just watch all the change come out, every little bit that we can.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we show women at a local level and a regional level instead of just allowing the media, the national media, to promote images of women that are not necessarily really people that we can all relate to. And they're, you know, they always have a mission of trying to sell you something whenever they're trying to promote somebody in the mainstream media. And so when we take control of the media ourselves as a community and as individuals, like we do here at KKFI, we're really, you know, taking control of the narrative, and we're able to really show what women can do and who women are. And Imani is a great example of somebody who took all that negativity that, and she changed. She wanted to get away from that, and she was able to be strong and to chart her course into a better direction. And that's what every woman, our show, that's what we wanted to express to other people, and we want to show that.
And if you want to support us, please give us a call at 888-931-0901 or go online at kkfi.org and make sure you mention the 10th voice when you donate.
No, every woman.
Oh,
the 10th voice
goodness.
Was earlier today.
You could mention that.
I'm sorry.
I guess you can mention both, but you're more likely to get the money out of the donor.
We were just making sure you were paying
woman.
Attention. Yes.
You could say you want to take money away from the 10th voice and give it to every woman. Don't worry, they can't really do that, I think.
And, you know, being a sustaining member is a great way to show your support at KKFI. It allows us to kind of know what's coming in and predict, you know, the amount of the amount that's coming in so that we can plan ahead, and that's something that's important.
But if you volunteer to be a sustaining member today for the next year, all of that money goes towards LaDonna's pledge. So it would help count. So if you said, hey, I can do $15 a month for the next 10 months, it would still count and take all of her money away from her. And we would thank you very, very much.
I really think that this new format, focusing a bit more on a greater breadth of women's issues and feminist issues, as well as focusing a bit more on the local community, is a good one, because we are Kansas City's community radio. We are here to represent the underrepresented people in this town. We are here to give light to the issues that nobody wants to talk about. And if you would like to support us in this change of direction and format to really bring everything home right back here where it belongs and talk about it, then please give us a call at 888-931-0901. Or go online to kkfi.org and don't mention the 10th voice. Instead, mention every woman.
And I think that our mission as feminists is to include every woman, not just people that are activists or people that have high-flying jobs and people that are in power, but every woman has issues and rights and deserves equality and respect. And so we're a community station, and we reach out to all of the women in the community. We're not going to say to someone, we're a feminist, and so you shouldn't be a stay-at-home mom because that's demeaning to women. What's demeaning to women is trying to force you into somebody else's idea of roles and what you want to do and force you to follow their patterns.
Yes, please call 888-931-0901 and support every woman.
We need to make sure we get that match and soak it to LaDonna Sanders, make her so she never wants to show up again at the station. She'll have that giant hole in her wallet.
So if somebody is a sustaining member, like let's say they were going to give $5 a month or $10 a month, that total amount would be matched, is what you're saying?
Yes, if they make the sustaining member pledge now, that'll match out for the year.
Well, that sounds, I mean, that, I think a lot of times people are afraid to give because they think they don't have much to give. But I think any little bit would help. And $5 a month would add up to quite a bit, and we would double the money. So it's something to consider.
Well, that's our time slot. So I'm sure we'll get updated soon by the volunteers on how much of LaDonna's money we managed to extract from her.
It's wonderful. And now we get to return to talking to our every woman right here in the studio, Imani.
Woohoo. Oh, we got two woohoos. We've got a Bill woohoo and an Imani woohoo.
Oh, we should get the two of them together, do a double woohoo.
Stereo. So we said that you two met at work, and how did that relationship really get going? You said you were best friends.
Oh, many things. Other than being best friends, the support that I had from him was huge. The only time I've ever felt that support is from my sister. And it was really nice to finally have someone that was actually there to look up to, in a sense, and to be able to fall back on. He's always supported me through so many different things in my life, and he was there for a lot of tough things. He's my best friend, and I love him more than words can express.
That's wonderful. And I do have a slight secret that listeners to everyone may not have heard, but we actually had Ryan on the 10th Voice show about a year ago? No. Mm-mm. More like 6 months ago. Mm-hmm.
I think about 6 months ago, yes.
Yeah.
And he did a wonderful shout-out to you then on the show as well.
Yeah, it made me cry a little bit.
So he's fully listening in the car watching Sydney and trying not to sniffle.
Yes, he's doing childcare right now. How much is he going to charge you?
Well, I just have to feed him. So.
That reminds me of a new story we were talking about before we came on the air.
Yeah, there isn't a certain candidate for office that you want to go and feed as well.
Hard no.
So, did you have any issues with actually being at work and finding someone at work, especially given earlier cases about the sexual harassment and how things can be at
work? Workplace romances can be very problematic, especially if the person you're having the romance with is really freaky.
You mean like you?
Moving on.
It wasn't really that hard. I guess the only hard part was trying to keep it quiet because we didn't want a lot of people to know, since the warehouse has a lot of people, play like telephone and a whole lot of things can get around. So that was the only hard part, was keeping it quiet, because how people actually started to find out was because I wear my heart on my sleeve and I smile a lot. And whenever I smile, when I look at him anyway, when I smile, my eyes glisten a little bit. So I've heard, which I've never seen, obviously, I don't hold a mirror in front of my face, but that was how people found out, is because they're like, how she looks at you, just how she looks at you is how we knew. And I was like, well, darn, like, I don't know what else to do. I was like, I tried to keep quiet for as long as possible, but it wasn't hard after that. After people started to find out, then everybody was on board and
so
didn't really care.
Is Ryan a trans man?
Yes.
And did you know from the beginning that he was a trans man?
Well, at the time I met him, he was not a trans man.
Okay.
Well, not out as a trans man.
Not out as a trans man. I always kind of had little inklings here and there, but I just went with the flow. I'm just kind of that person. I just kind of go with it. Like, okay, let's do it. Like, let's go do this. That's awesome. So for the first 6 months of our relationship, he was who he was before. And so about 4 months after we started dating, then that's when he came out to me. I was actually in the shower. I've told that story multiple times.
You can tell it again.
Yes, Allison's went to heard it.
I'm in the shower washing my hair, and Ryan comes and sits down on the toilet. And
now, were
like,
you dating at this time?
At this time, we were dating. We were official.
Okay.
So officially together, or Facebook was, official and everything.
Or he just happened to walk into her house. Because that happens.
Yes. Yeah, I remember seeing Psycho and the shower scene. So let's hope this doesn't end like that.
Yeah, no knives, I swear. So he came in and sat on the toilet and said, hey, I have something that I need to tell you. And I was like, okay. He's like, well, hold on a second. Let me finish scrubbing my hair. I can barely hear you. So I'm like, so what's going on? I mean, is everything okay? Like, you kind of just seem like you're really upset. He's like, no, I think that I'm trans. And he just starts crying. And I'm like, why are you crying? And he's like, because, like, he was just didn't know what to say. He was speechless. I was like, well, what do we need to do? Like, let's do it. And he's like, that's all you have to say? I said, well, what else is there to say? Like, there's nothing else for me to say other than I'm here for you and I'll support you. And from then on, we started the journey of him becoming who he is and going to therapy and setting the appointments and going through the mood swings, even though he says he never had any. love you, babe. I'll hear about that.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't hard, I don't think, personally, for me. I was just there for mainly support, but it was awesome.
But it was a lot more than that, because one thing, knowing untold stories along these lines, is that many times a person will say, I'll be there for you, I'll support you, but the third part is missing, which is, I will still love you. And so many times an admission like this or a confession is the end of the relationship, but it was not even really that much of a bump in the road for you.
No, it really wasn't. I love Ryan for who he is. And he's a wonderful person that is loving and caring, has an open heart, stubborn, but all around awesome person. I mean, you guys met him.
Many times.
He's a great guy.
Do you think your history of having other people make decisions about who you are and the discrimination that you faced helped you accept Ryan?
I do. I really do. I've opened my mind a lot more since I moved away from where I grew up. Because, I mean, I only knew a very small amount of people, and I never identified myself as bisexual. I was never really attracted to the opposite sex or anything like that. Never thought about it. And so, I mean, I identify myself as omni or what, pansexual is also another way to say it, which means that you just fall in love with a person for who they are and not what they look like.
Or you could just be a human being.
Yeah, we could just I think everybody should be that way.
Say you're just a human being.
Because, I mean, I don't like to put labels on it, but, I mean, if somebody asked me, like, what would you identify as, that, in a sense, is my identity. I don't like to put labels on things because then I feel like people look at you differently in that sense, so just kind of go with it.
And I think another descriptor, really, for you would be survivor, because you have an entire life history of surviving and beating every challenge that came your way. And you could think of this was almost a challenge to the relationship, that you said, you know what, this is nothing. This is just a thing, and okay, so now we change pronouns and a few other things. Big deal.
Yeah.
And I was really lucky because I got to meet you two through that process. Mm-hmm. And then last November, there was a day when we couldn't actually make it for the Every Woman show because we went to see Imani and Ryan get married.
Yeah, it was great. It was super awesome to see you guys there. I was really happy.
Has your family been supportive, the family that you are connected with at all? Like your daughter's grandparents and... Mm-hmm.
Well, like grandparents
did you say that you are still connected to one of your sisters or any of your family?
My sister Olivia, we're best friends. She's the one that we came from the same father and have the same mom with all the other sisters. We're the only one that has the same dad. She's always been supportive. She knew Ryan before his process and his journey and everything. So she's always been on board, 110%. A couple of my family members, not so much. There's some family that just don't know because they're a little bit older, and I haven't really gotten to that yet. Don't really feel the need to, and it's also really not my place. I mean, if they find out, they find out, but if they don't, then, I mean, I'm not going to just spring it out on them like that. Especially now since Ryan is completely passing. I mean, if I showed you a picture of him, you would never know.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of people are like, what? Huh? Wait, I thought, no. Like, this is who he is. And so
let me ask you a question about passing, especially because you identify as being biracial. Mm-hmm. How does passing work in the trans community as far as, does Ryan, if Ryan can pass, At what point does he ever say he's trans? Or does that matter? Or does he...
Well, with him, he's... Because there's many different people that... Or a couple trans people that I know that are completely silent about it. They don't ever talk about it. They're just...
Because if you're a man, you're a man.
Right. Exactly. And, I mean, Ryan is a man. Sometimes he will open about it, depending on who you are and how close he is to you. But he's kind of at that point of... I mean, he's at a new place of work, and so nobody knows, which is great. So he doesn't have to worry about people looking at him differently or people saying snide marks behind his back or anything like that. They just look at him as him. Because a lot of people look at him differently after they find out, and they don't really think he really is who he is. They think that he's still who he was.
Right.
And so it's just easier sometimes that way.
It's very similar when you're a biracial person, because people are looking for identifiers that you're black, or they're looking for white identifiers. And so it sounds like there's a similarity there.
It's very similar.
Yeah. And will your daughter, what point will you tell your daughter, or will you ever tell your daughter, or how will that?
We were actually talking about this the other day. Because I was like, I said, how do we answer that question? I was like, how do you think we should handle that? And he's like, well, when the time is right, I will have the conversation with her by myself. Because obviously she's going to have questions when she gets older. Because since her biological father is very dark, she's at least 3 or 4 shades darker than I am. With time, she'll start asking questions I already know. They'll be like, oh, well, because, I mean, kids at school all the time, well, that can't be your dad. I mean, he's Irish, so super, super light. he said that he'll have that conversation when the time comes. I mean, I'm not sure what the conversation will be, but I don't really think she'll care. I mean, we try to keep everything open as much as possible. I mean, even though she's only 3 years old, we always try and stay open with her in many aspects of life. Like, whenever she wants to wear, I mean, she wears boy underwear. I mean, she wears Power Ranger underwear that's boy underwear, and I'm like, go ahead and, like,
well,
wear it.
You know,
because she could probably only get it in pink for the pink Power Ranger.
Right, like, there's no pink Power Ranger. Where there's always...
Yeah, RuPaul says we're all in drag, right? So we all dress in drag every day. So
right.
This is whatever.
I mean, she'll just... I mean, they'll just have that conversation when the time comes, and I mean, I don't think she'll have... I mean, I doubt she'll have any issues with it.
I think many psychologists have found that on many different issues of admitting, you know, dread secrets to children, whether that's a case of sexuality, racial heritage, gender identity of one or more of the parents, the kids take the cue from how the parents treat it and how they act about it. If the parents act embarrassed, ashamed, it's a dread secret, they're talking in whispers with the curtains drawn, the child then starts to feel this is a big, scary deal. But if it's just open and matter of fact and just no big deal, the children cue off of that too and say, so, you know, this is why my mom is this way, or this is why my dad is that way. Huh, good to know. And it's generally not, it's the same situation that when trans kids are introduced to their classmates in school. The kids get it. There may be some mild teasing here and there, but generally speaking, there's no fear and dread. It's when they go home and tell the parents, and the parents absolutely have kittens, that's when the child starts to learn, okay, there really must be something wrong, because why else would my dad start punching holes in the drywall?
Right.
Well, another question is, you said that Sydney talks to Ryan and calls him dad.
Yeah.
So this leads to the next thing, which is that he's acting as a dad to her, and she's lost her dad because he just doesn't keep in contact. So what do you do in a situation like that to get to be a proper legal family together?
We've gone through a couple court dates, filled out a lot of paperwork. At first, we had to do custody, which I won sole custody because he never showed. Didn't present anything to the court. And then now this next step that we're taking is adoption. So you basically, I mean, you just go to a lawyer, tell them you want to file for adoption. They have to make sure that the biological father really isn't a part of the child's life. They try to sit there and say that they want consent, written consent from the biological father, but if you can't get consent, then they go ahead and go with it, go ahead and start the adoption process, and then they will try to write a letter to him to be like, hey, this is what's going on. If he doesn't respond, then the adoption process continues, and then she's his.
I know my father was actually illegitimate, and my grandmother got married, and the person she married wanted to adopt my father and make them a legal, rounded family. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother actually had to adopt my father at the same time because otherwise she would have been surrendering her parental rights.
That's
Do you
so
have
weird.
Anything like that over here? Or
no, not that I know of. I mean, so, I'm pretty sure they would have told me.
But, yes.
But, I mean, I haven't had that surprise come yet. That's odd. It really yeah. is. I mean, so, I signed the birth certificate. I think that's good enough.
Yeah. So you're going to get to be a legal, happy family, and there'll be rights, and you can't just be split up and taken away, which right. is always a risk.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
Yes.
So I know you said earlier about how abandoned and how hurt you felt with your father disappearing. If there's one thing that you could have in a podcast to play for Sydney in 10 or 15 years' time for her to sit down and hear, what message would you like her to hear from this?
To always keep her mind open, to always love with an open heart, to always support and care for everyone close to you. Never take life for granted. Live every day like it's your last, and know that your mom and dad love you. Oh, you're going to make me cry.
It's really simple and powerful.
Yes, that's why there was a pause here instead of me just leaping straight in and saying thank you. But yes, thank you very much, Imani, for joining us today and sharing your story with everyone.
Thank you very much for coming on and just giving us another example of what it really means to be every woman in this world of ours.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So stay tuned. Coming up next, we are going to have Urban Connection with Donna Wolf. And then after that, guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. And you have been listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Woohoo!